It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 109. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined first by Sean Yule of prideofdetroit.com, which is the Detroit Lions SB Nation site. We talk about Ziggy and what he thinks of that selection and what maybe some of the fans and others think of Ziggy being taken by the Lions with the fifth pick, and also what he thinks about 3D glasses as a fashion accessory. I then chat with my brother Matt about Ziggy. We talk about Kyle Van Noy's draft prospects and whether we think he might get taken in the 2014 NFL draft. We also talk about Bronco on Twitter and discuss seeing Iron Man 3. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can get us at vanquishthefoe.com. You can always follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And you can email us, adam@loyalcougars.com. And of course, you're going to listen to us right now. Welcoming to the podcast is Sean Yule. Sean is a writer for the SB Nation Lions site, and you're an editor too there, right, Sean?
Yes, the managing editor of prideofdetroit.com.
Prideofdetroit.com. I guess a sister site of ours, Vanquish the Foe. So definitely check that out. And of course, it's no mystery why we brought Sean on with Ezekiel Ansah's high draft choice. So we're going to talk to Sean about that. So Sean, first things up, a lot of the mock drafts had Ziggy Ansah going to Detroit at number 5. I saw, you know, some variation, but quite a few did. Was this something that you, as someone that follows the team closely, anticipated, or was it kind of a mystery who the Lions might select with that pick?
Well, the main mystery going into the draft was the question of, will one of the top 3 offensive tackles actually make it to number 5? And the thinking was that if one of Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, or Lane Johnson fell to number 5, the Lions would take him, since they are in need of a left tackle with Jeff Backus retiring this offseason. And they did draft Riley Reiff, an offensive tackle from Iowa last year, but he would have been a better fit, it seems, to be at right tackle, although now he will be forced to be at left tackle, since the top 3 guys did go. So that left only a few real options that were considered to be real possibilities, and that was either Ezekiel Ansah, an offensive guard, which seemed like a bit of a stretch for the top 5 of the draft, or somebody like Dee Milliner or another defensive player. And so for the Lions going into the draft, the majority of the mock drafts, we actually had a database that tracked about 60 or so, and the overwhelming favorite was Ansah, which is interesting because just a few months earlier, he wasn't even on the radar for the Lions or any top 5 team. And that just goes to show how big you can rise up the draft boards, and especially in Ansah's case, considering his background where he didn't even play football a few years ago. It shows how quickly you can go from being a nobody in the football world to being on top of the football world, especially in Detroit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So before we get into the draft night itself and some of his 3D glass wearing activities, let's start with just your evaluation of the pick. Obviously, if one of those 3 offensive tackles who are all very well thought of had been available, that probably would have been an obvious choice, but they weren't, and so it was Ansah. And do you think this is the right choice? And you don't have to pull punches just because it's a bunch of BYU fans that will send you hate mail. I'm just kidding. But is this the right choice, or are you and maybe others who follow the team a little worried about one-year wonder and can he really hack it in 16 games in the NFL a season?
It's definitely a concern. And, I mean, the one thing I always say is no matter who you take in the NFL draft, there's always some form of risk. And some players definitely are safer than others, especially in the case of some of these offensive tackles. But given what the Lions had to work with and the hand they were dealt, they really were making the best of a bad situation. And I say that not as a slight against Ansah, but simply because they could have really used a tackle. And how many years is there a situation where there are 3 tackles in the top 4? I mean, that's the type of thing never happens. And, of course, it happens the one year where the Lions actually need a tackle. And so they were really left with a situation where it was either take a defensive end, which was their top position of need going into this draft, after they cut Kyle VandenBosch, they lost Cliff Averill. And really their defensive line is the heart and soul of that defense because it's predicated on getting a pass rush. And That's why they have such a great defensive tackle tandem in Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley. But with no defensive ends really on the roster that have done much, I mean, they have 3 sacks coming back from last year. They really needed a defensive end. And yes, Ansah is inexperienced by most top-five pick standards, and yes, he is considered to be a raw player. But I think at the end of the day, they did the best that they could with what they had. And I personally, on draft day, was hoping to see them go with an offensive guard just because they really needed an upgrade at right guard. They need to make sure that Matthew Stafford is protected. But after seeing their entire draft play out and considering they got an offensive guard from Kentucky who should be a day one starter in the third round, I think that all in all, they did a pretty good job by getting Ansah in the first round.
Yeah, it's actually, the defensive line is kind of amazing. They're all, you know, Fairley, Sue, and now Ansah, all high round, first round draft picks. So it's a lot of talent there. So sticking with Ansah, he gets drafted and he's wearing these goofy glasses that have suddenly taken off or something. I don't know. I guess you get glasses when you buy his jersey now. That's where I read somewhere. Did anything about that night, you know, a lot of players do a lot, wear, you know, goofy suits or really nice suits or whatever. How did you and other Detroit fans react to kind of that draft night and his interviews and that kind of thing? Was it positive, seeing that he's got some personality, or was it like, oh my gosh, who is this guy?
Well, there's always going to be a select group of fans who look for any possible area where they can criticize a pick, especially given the Lions' draft history. And with Ansah, that was the 3D glasses. I mean, there were some people who said, is he really taking this seriously, if he's going to wear 3D glasses on the biggest day of his life? And others who were just questioning his overall idea of what the draft should be about, given his background and lack of football knowledge from just a few years ago. And so they sort of played that into the criticism about how he's inexperienced. But, I mean, I think after hearing his interviews, especially his introductory press conference, where he had some fun with the whole situation and he was given new glasses by the Lions, I think people got an idea of what his sense of humor is all about and that this wasn't really a big deal. Although the Lions are making it into a big deal, like you said, they're now giving away 3D glasses for the next week or so if you buy his jersey. So I think, if anything, this will end up being something where you see a lot of 3D glasses at Ford Field this fall, especially when Ansah is making sacks.
Yeah, I think so. So let's talk about the Lions in general. Their team that a couple of seasons ago had a really good year, and I think a lot of people thought maybe this was a change, that they had set a new, you know, this was the new norm for them and that they'd kind of turned a corner. But then, of course, last year was not good, 4-12. So what do you think? Are we going to see something close to the 2011 team? Or are we going to see something close to 2012 or somewhere in between those two seasons?
I think somewhere in between is the best bet. And I say that for a couple of main reasons. In 2011, when they finally ended their decade-long playoff drought and they went 10-6 in the regular season, they made some outstanding comebacks that year in games that they had no business winning. And so they had a lot of luck on their side, especially in terms of late-game comebacks. And this past season, it was sort of the opposite. There were 3 games in a row where they had a lead late in the fourth quarter against really good teams, the Houston Texans, Green Bay Packers, Indianapolis Colts, all teams that went to the playoffs, and they just couldn't close those games out. And so it was a situation where it was reversed last year, where they were the ones coming back. This year, they couldn't hold on to leads. And toward the end of the season, the Lions really just fell apart after that span. And they got off to a really slow start. They won a close game to open the season, but then they lost a few in a row, including a ridiculous game where they did make a comeback, but then they lost in overtime because of a botched quarterback sneak on fourth down. And so they managed to get through the first half of the year with a respectable record, and they were still firmly in the playoff hunt. But after that 3-game span where everything just sort of fell apart, they couldn't really recover. And the end of the season was really just all about Calvin Johnson breaking the receiving record more than anything. And so I think this year there will be more balance with the offense since they have put a lot into the running game, and they have tried to add more weapons. So Calvin Johnson is getting triple teamed every time he's on the field. And defensively, they have improved at some positions, including the secondary, where they've really added some nice depth. And I think they're going to be more towards their 2011 season, probably not as good as 10-6. Although a lot can happen in the next few months to change my thought on that. But for right now, that's where I see it going. Somewhere near the playoffs, but not quite in the playoffs.
Yeah. And what about, what's your take on Stafford? It really looked, again, kind of mirrored what I said before. His 2011 season looked like maybe he had taken a big step and was, if not an elite quarterback, certainly in that second group of quarterbacks, and it didn't have quite that same season last year. And as you mentioned, protection was a big part of that. How do you feel about his development? And is this a guy that, after watching Joe Flacco win a Super Bowl, I guess that gives you maybe more hope. But is this the kind of guy that can take you to that next level, or do you feel like he's going to be part of the thing that holds Detroit back from making that next step?
I think he's certainly a part of the equation where if they ever do make it to a Super Bowl, he'll be a big reason why. And he's thrown for 10,000 passing yards the last two seasons. And Obviously in today's world for the NFL, that's not nearly as big of an accomplishment as it would have been 10, 20 years ago. But that's still quite the feat, especially when you consider that the Lions didn't have that many weapons on offense last season. After injuries piled up, they lost Nate Burleson, Ryan Broyles, and got really inconsistent play out of their tight ends. And the running game really didn't get much respect from opposing defenses. And so for the Lions and Stafford, it was a situation where there was a lot of pressure on him, especially given the issues with the offensive line at times. And he does have to be better, but a lot of it wasn't on him. Now, that said, he wasn't nearly as good as he was in 2011. And that year, he threw for over 5,000 yards, had 41 touchdowns, and I believe only 16 interceptions. And last season, it was a big step back in that sense. He wasn't nearly as accurate. His throwing motion sort of degraded as pressure built up, where he reverted to the sidearm that can be very effective, but at times seemed like it was just being forced. And so going forward, Stafford does need to take that next step where he's not necessarily at an Aaron Rodgers level, because that's a bit too much to expect, but he needs to be in the conversation, at least, of being an elite quarterback in the sense that he's able to lead his team to playoffs on a consistent basis. He's able to potentially win playoff games once he does get there. And in general, he needs to be more consistent from a week-to-week basis where he's not throwing three interceptions in the first half of the season and making mistakes like that. He really needs to be more consistent going forward.
All right. Well, let's finish this up with kind of your overall thoughts on. Well, you're a Michigan guy too, right?
Yep.
So college football, we obviously cover college football. And are you a big college football fan as well, Sean?
Yeah, I've been attending games at Michigan since 1997, actually, and I graduated last year from the University of Michigan. And in my last season there as a student, I actually attended every single game. So I'm definitely a college football nut, actually even more so than the NFL, if I'm being honest.
I'd say you qualify with that. So let's talk a little bit about college football before I let you go. Was curious that you're a Big Ten, you know, aficionado being with the Wolverines. What is your take on the realignment of the Big Ten? Are you, like most people, happy to see the leaders and legends disappear? And are you happy with the way they divided out the Big Ten?
Well, really, the only positive in my mind that came out of adding Maryland and Rutgers was that they realigned the divisions, because nobody liked the names, for starters. And from an alignment standpoint, nobody understood why they split Michigan and Ohio State up in the first place. I know they had the idea that maybe a back-to-back rematch would draw a lot of ratings, but I think there was an idea as well that maybe they'll be able to move the game to midseason at some point, and then you can cash in on Michigan and Ohio State twice a season. But that was obviously never going to happen.
Right.
Michigan fans and Ohio State fans can only agree on one thing, is that they're not moving the game. And so that idea was pretty much shot down as soon as the divisions were out originally. And so now that they have them in the same division, obviously the East looks a little more stacked than the West, but all in all, I'm quite happy with how things turned out, especially since Michigan and Ohio State won't have a rematch possibility beyond this season.
Yeah, I think that's a massive positive. And what's your take on the new championship format that is still a couple of years away here, but are you a fan of that kind of plus one, four? Would you rather see them go back, or are you one that would even like them to go to a more expanded playoff system?
Well, it's far from perfect, because I personally was hoping that maybe you have a system where you get home games for the top two teams sometime in mid-December, and then you spread it out a bit more, and you don't have neutral sites, back-to-back weeks, and bowl games. But all in all, a playoff is obviously a huge upgrade over the old system. I mean, there's still going to be controversy no matter how many teams you add into it. The last two who get in, there's going to be some controversy surrounding those teams and who got left out. But I think it's better for the sport, and it's more exciting for the sport, that you're going to have more teams being able to compete for a national championship. And even if it is only four teams, it's a playoff. And that's a big step over having computers and people who barely even watch college football games getting to decide who wins the national championship or who competes for the national championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Sean, thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it. I know, as I said before we got on, a lot of BYU fans, I think, are going to be following the Lions this year. So you may see an uptick in TV ratings in Salt Lake City if any of the games are actually there. But, you know, BYU fans are spread out all over, so there'll be a lot of us with our NFL Sunday packages tuning into probably more Lions games than we would have otherwise. That's the one question I forgot to ask you before. Do you think Ansa's going to, before I let you go, is he going to be an every down player? Do you think they're going to, like some top pass rushers coming into the league, they don't play him on obvious running downs a lot and kind of break them in slowly, maybe giving them 40, 50% of the reps for the first few games before they get in there? Or do you think the coaching staff there has enough confidence in him to make him a more of a full-time player right year one?
I think he'll go into the season as a starter basically by default, just because the Lions still don't have that great depth at defensive end that you'd like. I mean, they could probably benefit from adding a veteran, but who knows if they'll have cap space to actually do that. So I think from that standpoint, he'll be a starter just because he's going to be one of the most talented defensive ends on the roster. Now, will he end up playing on every down when games actually arrive? I think early on you'll see him used more situationally than in an every down type of way. But, I mean, the hope would be by the end of the season he's experienced enough and he's gotten a big enough grasp on the playbook that he will be an every down defensive end. And you don't draft a defensive end fifth overall if you don't think he can play every down. So
right.
That will be the ultimate goal. But whether that'll happen early, I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sean. We appreciate you coming on the podcast and maybe have you on again sometime during the season after we actually have some performance of Ziggy to talk about, not just 3D glasses.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks.
It's the Rise and Shop podcast. We're back after a couple of weeks. Matt, there was something called the NFL Draft. You may have heard of it.
NFL Draft?
Yeah.
What's that? What is this draft you speak of?
I don't know. It's some big event where Jets fans boo no matter what. And
with good reason.
What are you talking about? They got Geno Smith. We talked about on the last podcast how much we love Geno Smith.
But you know what? I'm not surprised by that choice. The Jets are a hot mess.
And it just got worse.
Oh,
and it's fantastic. And the fact that then afterwards, all of the press is coming out with all these quotes that the reason he dropped to the second round is that after meeting him, a lot of these guys thought he was a prima donna and full of himself. He'll fit right in.
Yeah, actually, it's probably the perfect place for him.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Jets have become that guy in your fantasy football league that, like, try and corner the market on quarterbacks.
Yes.
They're just trying to get as many as the rules allow them to have on the roster.
Yes. Well, they released Tebow.
Oh, was he a quarterback?
Well, he's got some offers, I think, to play in some indoor football leagues and a few other things. So
he'll figure something out.
Yeah, he'll land on his feet.
Tebow will land on his feet. He'll, if it's not the football, I mean, he seems like a bright guy. He'll
yeah.
be fine.
Yeah. So anyway, Matt, let's talk Ziggy.
Yes, getting Ziggy with it.
So the most important question coming out of draft night is, are you pro or anti 3D glasses in normal wear? Not when there's no 3D images in front of you.
I think there's a definite safety issue involved here. I mean, I have a hard enough time wearing those things in a 3D movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Walking around like that, I mean, I just seems like a bad idea from a safety standpoint. And it's a little ridiculous. Come on.
Yes, it is quite ridiculous. We'll get to this later, but Bronco Mendenhall tweeted maybe one of the greatest pictures in the history of tweeting.
Oh, it is. It's a gem.
Of him wearing the 3D glasses and the ridiculous hat. He looks like a white middle-aged Urkel.
Well, but at least here, you know, you've got the 3D glasses with the lenses popped out, right? So
yes. Yes, I guess. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do with it.
So, yeah, anyway. So let's talk about that, Matt. A lot of mock drafts had Ziggy going at 5, but the draft, I think, played out in a crazy way, and by that I mean 3 tackles were taken in the first 4 picks.
Yeah.
Which has never happened before. And so Detroit probably, and we just talked about this with Sean Yule of prideofdetroit.com, they probably might have taken a tackle, but it was the perfect storm for them to get Ziggy because the tackles were off the board and they definitely needed a pass rusher because they had lost some of their guys. But how does this play for Ziggy? Do you feel like this is we talked about this a little bit on our last podcast, good fit being next to Sue and Fairley and some good other defensive linemen, or well, this is a 2-14 team and they don't really have much depth, and now he's going to be asked to do probably more than he'll be capable of in his first 16 games in the NFL.
Well, it is a team that needs a little bit of help, but one of the places that they don't need as much help is at defensive line. So I don't feel like they're going to be asking Ziggy to put the defense on his back. Right. If he played a different position, and I can even think of a couple of positions that the Detroit Lions would, you know, might be asking somebody to do that. But I think just because of where he's going to fit in on the defense, I think he is going to have a decent opportunity to grow into NFL play. And you know, say what you want about Fairley and Sue. You know, there are some questions about. You know, people say Sue's a dirty player and all this, but clearly they're both very talented at what they do. They are good at football.
Yeah.
And so I think an opportunity for Ziggy to get in there and be around people at that level of talent, hopefully is going to be really good for his career.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what did you make of the whole, you know, he wears the 3D glasses, gives the interviews and stuff. Let's again try to take off our 3D glasses, or at least our blue colored glasses. If, say, he had been drafted by our favorite team, the Patriots, and he had gone to some school we didn't follow, would that night have made you nervous, or would he said, oh, cool, he's got a personality?
I probably would have looked at it and said, this is a little silly. Hopefully he can just play football.
You know, if you had given me 100 guesses to guess what you would say, I probably would have got that on the first guess.
Oh, the word silly?
Yeah.
But it is a little bit. And
just go and play football.
Yeah, but if he weren't Ziggy, if he were this same type of player from a different school going to New England, okay, if I put myself in that mindset, that's exactly how I would react to that. Is right. Oh, that's nice, like that's cute. Let's see if you can tackle people in the NFL. That's really all I care about. You can wear all the 3D glasses you want. You can even say ridiculous things. And not that Ziggy said anything ridiculous, I don't think. But
no, his interviews, I think, were quite good.
No, but, yeah, he's saying the right things. You know, he's talking about wanting to help the team out, get the team to the next level, one of these kinds of things. He's talking about getting them deep into the playoffs. And, you know, if I'm a Lions fan, those are exactly the words I want to hear. out of our first-round draft pick, no matter who he is, no matter what he's got on his face or on his head. That's the kind of stuff I want him to talk about, is taking the team on a run.
So let's talk. We got some Twitter questions on some tweet bag questions on Ziggy. So let's answer some of those.
Tweet bag.
The Irish Mexican makes a return to the tweet bag. That's at Bullishism on Twitter.
And he was prolific with the tweet bag questions tonight.
Yes, he was. He was. We probably won't get to all of them, Mr. Mexican. Is that what we call him?
I'm not sure.
Or do we call him Mr. Irish Mexican? I don't know.
I don't know.
So Lions administration saying Ziggy to get playing time next year, put on coach's hat, play Ziggy next to Sue and Fairley, over under the number of games. For me, this is quite easy, but go ahead.
Is this and I meant to tweet him back and ask before we got to this. Is this number of games he appears in, or is this number of games he starts?
Well, let's do both. Over under games he plays in, 15. You're taking the over under.
I'm taking the over.
I am as well. Games he starts, 14.5, taking the over or the under.
The under.
I'm taking the over.
You think he starts basically every game?
I think there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. And I also have the benefit of I just talked to a guy that covers the Lions for a living. So but yes, I think you don't draft somebody with the fifth pick. This isn't a flyer at the end of the first round, right? This is the fifth pick of the draft. I'm not saying he's going to play every down. I think he will certainly on will probably start off playing situationally.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he will start, and I think he will play most downs, and I think he will start every game, barring injury, of course.
See, I think he clearly plays in every single game. And I think whether or not he starts early is going to kind of depend on how things go over the summer. And then, you know, if they figure out where they want to fit him in situationally, I think it's a lot easier to make that decision. So I'm still reserving judgment on whether or not he is a starter early. I think the first couple of weeks could still be breaking him in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So Matt, what does this mean for before I get to our next tweetbag question, what does this mean to BYU football? Fifth pick in the draft. Is this, and as we talked about in our last podcast, there's two other guys that could be fairly high draft picks coming in the 2014 NFL draft in Kyle Van Noy and Hoffman, and we're going to get to Van Noy here in a minute. But what does this mean to the program? Does it mean anything? Does this, you know, I don't hear any of those chirps about Bronco can't develop people for the NFL this year. And I think that'll be quiet for at least a couple of years. Does this mean something, or is this more just, this is great for Ziggy Ansah, it has a little benefit to the program, but really, in the end, you know, this isn't going to really move the needle in any meaningful way for the program?
I don't think this moves the needle in any meaningful way for the program by itself. This getting players to the NFL and, you know, using that metric to measure success of the program or effectiveness of the coaching, the only way you move the needle in that respect is when you can do this consistently. Not that you've got to have a guy in the top five every year, but you got to have players going in the first round, early in the second round. You've got to have players that are getting talked about. You know, you talk about, you know, you draft a guy with the fifth pick, you're going to start him. You're going to pay him a bunch of money, and because it's costing you so much, you're putting him on the field as much as possible. You need to have players that are going in picks that mean that. To NFL teams.
Yeah.
So the one, you know, this could just be an aberration. You could have a Ziggy show up, do this, and then not have another guy drafted in the top 20 for the next 10 years. What you need to do is you got to do this consistently. You need Hoffman and you need Van Noy to go high. And then you need somebody after that to go high. You need to have a Ziggy almost every year.
Yeah, but really BYU has never had a run like that.
Never.
I mean, in the 80s, they had some guys drafted high several years in a row, but not like what you're talking about.
Well, but it's also consistently been a criticism of the program over that time. Don't move guys to the NFL.
I think it's a ridiculous criticism. Quite frankly, I don't even know what that means. Like, the goal of the program is what? To put guys in the NFL? No. I mean, in the end, I don't care if we put guys in the NFL. It's a curiosity. I like it, but I'm not going to judge a program, you know, based on putting guys in the NFL. There were a couple of programs that put two guys in the first couple of rounds that were terrible teams last year. You know what I mean? I'm not talking about Alabama, obviously, or some of those schools.
Central Michigan.
You know, this isn't some powerhouse program that, you know, is going to start putting guys in there every year. It's
University
just kind
of Utah. I mean, there are bad teams.
Putting guys high. Yes. Terrible.
But you know, but Adam, you know who does judge programs by that?
Who's that?
Highly touted recruits.
I think there's a lot of evidence that that's not actually true. But I think BYU has signed highly touted recruits in the past, and I think other programs have signed highly touted recruits. I think winning at the college level, this isn't basketball. I think winning at the college level is what gets people's attention and a fun place to play. I don't know. You may be right, but I don't think that's true meter goes up for me on that. I hear it a lot, but I don't know that there's much evidence that's actually true.
Well, you know, he used to talk about that a lot, Jake Heaps.
Yes, Jake Heaps talked about that a lot. And when he leads the Jayhawks to a 1-11 record this year, we'll see how his NFL stock goes.
Yikes.
They're supposed to be terrible. And it probably won't be anywhere near his fault. But they're not supposed to be very good.
That's not a great situation.
By most prognostications. So, Matt, the Irish Mexican had another tweetback question, and this is what we like to call in the biz a great transition. Okay?
Wow.
Yes.
And was that a teaser?
That's called a tease. That something is coming in the next few seconds. Stay tuned, America.
Okay. A tease, not a tase. Not as in don't tase me, bro.
No tasing will be involved in this podcast. Okay. Well, I can't guarantee that.
Yeah,
but
you got to be careful with never.
Not to the listeners. The cops could bust into my house at any time. So can Kyle Vannoy possibly beat Ziggy's number 5 draft pick next year?
See, that's tough. I like the question. I like where he's going with this. But here's what happened with Ziggy. Ziggy went to the combine and was just an absolute freak of nature. And that's really what made this happen for him. Okay? That's what got the buzz going. That's what had people go into his film and these kinds of things.
And then the Senior Bowl as well.
Yeah. And I don't know that Vannoy is going to do that same thing. And I think Ziggy was also a much bigger surprise, given the story and everything, for a lot of scouts. And that becomes a factor also.
Yes.
Vannoy's a little bit more of a known commodity. And he's incredibly talented, but he's not just a freakish physical specimen that Ziggy is.
So most, there are 2014 mock drafts out there. You can find them on Google. SI, Football Post, a few other places that I've seen have him going in the 20s. Now, a year ago, nobody had Ziggy Ansah going anywhere. Right?
Nobody even knew who he was.
So it's really hard to guess this stuff in advance. But as you say, Vannoy is a known commodity. You know, when they place him in the 20s, they're doing so based on the fact that he's got these several years of a track record of being a very, very good college football player. Now, make no mistakes about it. Kyle Vannoy was a better football player last year than Ziggy Ansah. I think anybody else who thinks differently is they're stupid, I guess. Is that too harsh? Probably. But, I mean, he was a better football player. Ziggy Ansah has, like, once-in-a-lifetime, you know, freakish athletic skills. Now, that's not a knock on Vannoy. He's a great athlete. He's not like one of those guys. Well, he's a football player, you know, but he's going to run a 6-second 40 and only bench press 180 pounds. No, I mean, this guy's, you know, great physically, but that combination of size and speed that Ansah has, there just aren't that many guys that have that, you know. So he's the type of guy where you're taking a, yeah, you think he's going to be good out of the gate, but you're taking a flyer that he could be great. I just don't know that people will feel the same about Fenway. So let's do over under, pick 16.5 next year. Think he goes higher or lower?
I think he, well, when you say higher, do you mean closer to the first pick?
Yes, higher in the draft. Come on, dude.
No, he doesn't go higher than that. I'd take the lower.
I would too. Though I think he's a first-round draft pick.
He is a first-round draft pick. I think that's absolutely true. I think he's probably, I think 20-ish is probably about the right place for him. And a lot of that, and where he falls in between late teens and early 20s, is going to come down to, I mean, if we were doing this today, would come down to team needs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We
but
saw
that's
some guys.
Kind of the range that he's looking at in there. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, you can look at, if you look at the players available in this year's draft, I mean, I don't know if I'm sold on the fact that Eric Fisher was the best player available when the draft started. But the Chiefs needed a tackle.
Well, I think those three tackles are pretty darn good. So
they are. They're very good.
So
and I'm an
know.
O-line guy. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it was an offensive line heavy class. I mean, what, half of these top 10 picks, half of the first 10 picks are offensive linemen.
Yeah, it was crazy. So moving on from the NFL draft, Matt, something big happened. And it happened about the time that we recorded our podcast last time, but somehow missed the news. So this is, we're breaking news in no way, shape, or fashion. This is old news. But we're going to talk about it anyway.
But we're going to rehash something that most people have even forgotten about.
That's right. Bronco Fantastic. Mendenhall on Twitter.
Oh!
So if you read, I think it was in the Deseret News, I think it was Jeff Call had a piece on Bronco getting on Twitter, and he interviewed him about why. And Bronco basically, a lot of his quotes in that story are, well, if some misinformation gets out there, I can quickly address it. But we will not hear what he had for breakfast.
Which is unfortunate. I'd like to know what he's eating for breakfast.
No, well, I don't care what he's eating for breakfast. What do you make of this? This is a guy that is not particularly, you know, he's a private dude. And getting on Twitter, and when he was asked about getting on Twitter like a year and a half ago, he didn't even know what it was. So, you know, just curious your take on that. What do you take? Is this just kind of inevitable? It's just the age. Every coach is going to be on social media because otherwise you miss out on a chance for recruiting and also, like he said, fighting misinformation about the program.
I think for him, I think that Mendenhall is this season moving into a little bit of a new area for himself as a coach. If you look at this, the whole thing of bringing an eye back and the staff that he's put together, and I think that there's a certain level of, I think there's a raised comfort level for him in what he's doing. The other thing is, if you look at the prolific Twitter account of Tom Holmo, I would imagine that the two of them have had conversations about Twitter that have convinced Mendenhall that this is a way that he can meaningfully interact with fans. And also, you know, we've had this whole conversation before about, like, Anai can say whatever he wants to reporters, right? I mean, he can, I think it was,
I think
it was Zach Bloxham who tweeted, like, he can skin a cat in front of them for all I care as long as the team wins.
Yes, yes.
And I feel the same way about Anai, and I feel that same way about Mendenhall. But I do think that there is a certain level of wisdom in making yourself appear more approachable and more human and more likable. And I wonder if that is also part of the motivation behind this as well, is that he is a very private person and people really don't, and I think people don't understand or know who he is. Even because he's in such a public position, people think they understand and know who he is. And he's just looking for an opportunity to kind of clarify some of that as well.
So in the last 24 hours, here we are, nowhere, anywhere near the season, and maybe that's why. He has tweeted 5 times.
Yeah. But if you look before that,
yeah, it's
kind of
like
frequent.
Kind of like once a day. ish yeah. since he got
the up. Last day has been a little bit heavier.
The draft he had more, but you know it's about been once a day. Okay, so far besides the draft stuff and the picture of himself tweeting, it's been you know it's not been a ton of stuff. Anyway, I'm happy he's on.
I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's great. And like, for example, this picture of him and Ziggy at the draft, I think is awesome. The yes. picture of him tweeting, the picture of him doing the interview for BBC, you know, he's sending out like the schedule and these other things. I think it's fun. I think fans are going to eat this up. You know, especially during the football season, when you get into fall camp, can you imagine the tweets and the discussion around Bronco Mendenhall's tweets that could go on during fall camp?
Oh my gosh, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. And I'm excited about it. I'm encouraged, you know, looking at some of the things that he has done with it. So I think that this could turn out to be a lot of fun. When this first came out, when everybody's like, is this real? I thought, you know what? He's going to tweet, you know, and I read the story in the one that you were just referencing. And I thought he'll tweet maybe once every 3 weeks. You know, and it'll be, you know, some vague, like, thing about position mastery or execution. And this really isn't going to be very fun.
And he's also on Instagram.
You know what's great on Instagram is the BYU football Instagram account.
Oh, yeah.
I love that stuff that they put out.
It's fantastic. It gives you chills, doesn't it?
It does. It gives you absolutely get chills. It gets you excited for football. But no, I think this is going to be fun. I think this will be fun for fans. But what will be interesting to see is when the football season starts, you see how much grief Tom Homo gets about things. You know, when you get some of these pinhead football fans that really go after Mendenhall on Twitter, it's going to be interesting to see how he interacts with that.
Yes, it will. My favorite exchange with Homo was there was a guy that went after him after they had signed that, you know, kind of deal with scheduling deal with Arizona, and he basically said, we all know that the second or third game's going to get canceled. They always do. And Homo got sarcastic. did you read that exchange?
No, I don't remember this.
Yeah, and he's basically like, yeah, there's no reason. We should never take a risk and try to schedule good teams.
But you know what? Homo's made that fun. And for the most part, he's pretty cool about it. He gets some really stupid stuff.
Oh my gosh, he does. Who are these people? You're sending this to the athletic director.
Like he's really supposed to care. Program. Like he's actually supposed to care about your opinion.
Yeah, like
he doesn't.
Yeah, and I'm sure these are the same people. I'm not going to donate anymore. Yeah,
I think
sure
the program's going to get on without your $15 or $20 donation this year. I think they'll figure it out.
They'll probably figure it out. So, Matt, let's move on to something completely ridiculous. We're going to do a draft again.
I love drafts. I love drafts of all sorts.
Yes. And in honor of the NFL draft, this draft is going to be BYU players who played in the NFL and were drafting their careers. Okay? They have to have played in the NFL. Okay?
So we're not including
can't draft
for clarification purposes. We're not including careers in the CFL.
Correct. No Ben Cahoon.
Okay.
As no, it's important great to understand. As a CFL career as he had, he is not eligible for this draft.
And then we're also not considering a player's performance in the USFL.
We are not considering in the USFL, and also we're not considering their performance in college. It is irrelevant how good they were in college. We're just talking about their NFL careers.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I will also put out another soft rule. Okay.
Oh, I love soft rules because I will break it. Well, I don't even know what this rule is, but I've already decided I'm going to break it.
Okay. Be my guest. If you draft a punter or a kicker, I will mock you.
Oh, yes.
So I will mock you, okay? Because it's a punter or a kicker.
For you didn't even have to say this one. You didn't even have to say anything.
I didn't? Was he on your list already? All right, we'll get to this.
Be great.
Okay, because I am.
How many rounds are we doing? I don't know.
Three rounds.
How many?
Snake draft.
Three rounds. Oh, I might not get to him then. I may now, just to make you angry.
Yeah, good. Well, I won't be angry. I'm just going to mock you. I didn't say I was going to get angry.
You're going to mock me anyway, so I might as well throw it out there.
That's a fair point. Okay, so because I am so magnanimous, I'm filled with magnanimity. Well, I don't know what the word is.
You're full of something.
I'm full of something. I will let you have the first pick.
Oh, okay. Well, this is easy. I'm going to be like, you know what I watched the other day was the ESPN 30 for 30, Elway to Marino.
Yes, yes. Excellent.
So, you know, they covered how the Colts, the GM for the Colts went and just took Elway at the first second. You know, even though everybody thought that they would wait till the end of their pick time and try and work out a deal, they just handed in the card. That's what I'm about to do with the first pick of this draft.
And with the first pick of our BYU Cougars in the NFL draft, Matt selects.
Oh, it's Steve Young. It's absolutely Steve Young.
Oh, man. I really thought it was going to be Ryan Denny.
Wow, this is going to be a really interesting draft. you know, but seriously, though, you look at Steve Young. He's, you know, Hall of Fame, 3 Super Bowls, 7 Pro Bowl appearances, 2-time MVP award winner, MVP of Super Bowl 29. I mean, the guy was amazing. Didn't start out real great. But you look at what he did in San Francisco, and the guy is just a legend of the game.
Yeah.
And that's not just – I mean, and I am an absolute BYU homer, but I feel like even outside of BYU circles, I mean, this guy is one of the greatest ever.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He is he's one of the greatest ever. Doesn't matter BYU or not. He's a Hall of Famer, right? So he's awesome. All right. So I've got the second pick and the third pick, okay?
Okay.
So I don't have to – this one is pretty easy for me as well. I am going to turn in that pick, the second pick, and do another quarterback, Jim McMahon.
Ah, I knew it.
So Jim McMahon, of course, played for 7 NFL teams. He won Super Bowl 1986 – Super Bowl 20 in 1986 – had his career, unfortunately, kind of ruined by a late hit, which a lot of people – it was a crazy, terrible late hit where the guy just grabbed him and threw him on the ground. So that's how Jim McMahon's career kind of went off the rails, though he played for a lot of time after that. He played for quite a few years. He also won a second Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. So, kind of interesting, both of his Super Bowl victories were over the Patriots. So, he was a 1-time Pro Bowler, as I said, 2-time Super Bowl champion, and then he did come back after the injury in 91. He did have some good years after the Bears, but never played at that elite level, I don't think, that he did on that 1986 team. So, that is my first pick. Is Jim McMahon. My second pick, this one's really hard for me because there's a lot of players I wanted to consider at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm an offensive guy, and I'm going to keep going offense. All right?
What are you going to do?
So with my next pick in the NFL draft, I think this is going to be controversial. But I'm going to go with 3-time Pro Bowler Chad Lewis.
Ah!
3 straight Pro Bowls for the Eagles. For the Eagles, he played for the Eagles twice. This was a guy that you know. Didn't he walk on at BYU?
Chad Lewis was a walk on at BYU.
Yeah, walk on,
and was also went undrafted.
Also went undrafted. So this is a guy that kind of made it happen. Now, obviously, he's involved with the university and all that, which is great. And as he's associate athletic director, which I believe is still true. But man, he had a pretty good NFL career, and he played in a time where, you know, he was kind of ahead of his time as these more of a wide receiver than a tight end. But now that's really, really common in the NFL, a lot more common than it was when he played. And there were a lot of guys that hardly ever caught balls at all, during some of that era. So, that's my pick. All right, Matt, you've got 2 in a row. before I finish up the draft.
This is tough. This is tough for me. But here's what I'm going to do.
What are you going to do?
With my second pick, I'm also going to select somebody who spent some time in San Francisco.
Ah.
I'm taking Bart Oates.
Bart Oates. You know, it was close for me between Bart Oates, and it's probably, honestly, I may have messed that one up.
I'll tell you what. Had you taken Oates, I was going to take Lewis. You know, but you look at Bart Oates. I mean, the guy was – I mean, to be an offensive lineman in the NFL for 11 seasons.
Yeah.
That's really – that in and of itself is a really remarkable accomplishment. When you add to that he played on 3 Super Bowl championship teams and was selected for 5 Pro Bowls. I mean, the guy was just an anchor for the offensive line there forever. So, you know, when you look at what he was able to do in combination with working with Steve Young, you know, there's just if you're a 49ers fan, that's just a magical period of time in history.
Yeah.
So I take him. And you know what? I like the fact that I get to take an offensive lineman there.
So do you know that you just picked 2 guys that played in the USFL?
I do. And he left the USFL when he was, what, 83? And then they folded and went, and then he went to the NFL, right?
Yes, I believe that is the case.
Yeah.
And won, as you said, 3 Super Bowls, which is kind of good. All right, so your third and last pick.
This is tough. I'm really laboring over this last pick. This is tough. I'm going to take I'm down to 2 guys, and neither of them are a kicker or a punter, unfortunately. Let's see. Let me compare this here. All right. For me, I could take either of these 2, so I'm just going to take 1.
Okay.
I'm taking Jason Buck.
Oh, nice choice.
He was on 2, was in 2 Super Bowls for 2 different teams. Won one with the Redskins. Was a first round draft pick. Played for 6 years. This is another guy. I don't know if I put him on the Steve Young type of level, but this is another guy very widely respected among people who know what they're talking about in the NFL. So I feel comfortable with this pick. What's interesting about, I feel like, a lot of these selections is
19 career sacks, by the way.
A couple of quarterbacks, and then we got a lot of other stuff getting talked about in here, which I think is very interesting when you're considering BYU.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think you muffed that pick tremendously. Because I am now going to take who I never thought he'd come back to me because she had 2 picks in a row, is Todd Christensen.
Yeah.
5-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, maybe I should take Christensen.
2-time! You can't. It's too late.
Well, 2-time. But you know what? He wasn't even one of the 2 I was looking at.
Who was your other?
It was Brett Kiesel.
Oh, my gosh, you're nuts. Christensen's a 5-time Pro Bowler, 2-time Super Bowl champion, 41 career touchdowns, almost 6,000 career yards. And I thought of taking him before, but I'm glad I waited, because I gotta play him. And on top of that, he had a sweet, sweet mustache, which makes him maybe worthy of the pick. I mean, is it Kiesel's beard? No, but I mean, Kiesel's beard has its own Twitter account, doesn't it?
Nothing is Kiesel's beard.
No, that's...
Kiesel's beard has raised more money for charity in a year than most people do in their lifetime. Okay? So I think you got to respect the beard.
Yes, I agree. I also had another player that I considered was Tom Homo himself, who had a decent little NFL career, but not at the same level as some of these other guys we're talking about.
No, but he can get into the conversation there.
Oh, sure. And I really wanted to, like, think about picking Ty Detmer, but his NFL career just was not was not it, you know, unfortunately. I actually think it's kind of sad because I think he was a better player than he gets credit for, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's tough. You know who I really wanted to talk about was Lee Johnson.
He did have a nice career, so let's not
around for a long time.
He was around for a long time,
a really long time, and that's it's not like playing defensive line or something for that long.
No,
but, what about somebody like a Mark Wilson? You know what's interesting here is we talk about this cradle of quarterbacks, but I wouldn't put him in there. I still feel like I wouldn't necessarily put him in these first three rounds.
No, he was kind of a journeyman quarterback. He was he didn't really stick. And then of course Bosco, who I think would have been really good in the NFL, fortunately injuries derailed him a little bit. Pitta, his career's still going, so
he might. Pitta could put himself in that circle.
Yeah, absolutely, he could put himself in that circle. And if we counted Cahoon, he would have been way up there.
What about, if Austin Colley really comes back, returns to form?
I think that's pretty doubtful. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but he's got that many concussions. It's just tough.
And they were bad. That last one, I was watching that game. That was.
I mean, think about this. All right, his total. If I gave you without looking at it. He's over under on total NFL yards, and he played in really three seasons. Last year, he caught one ball. So three NFL seasons, I set the over under on total NFL yards at 2,000. Is he over that or under it in 3 years?
Probably under.
Under 1845. And part of that is because his best season in 2010, he only played in 9 games due to the injuries. I mean, the thing is, besides the concussion, the guy's tough as nails. I mean, I shouldn't say besides the concussion.
Well, there's nothing you can do about the concussion.
That's what I'm saying.
It's just a freak thing.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that, this isn't an injury-prone guy who also had concussions. This is just a guy that got concussions. I mean, the other two seasons were, 2011 and 2009. He played in all 16 games, 16 career touchdowns. Yeah, you're right. If he was able to come back and had another couple of years like he had, you're right.
What about a guy like Kurt Govea?
Kurt Govea, sure. Sure. He had a good career. And there's somebody, I feel like we're missing somebody.
Well, I'm trying to go through and see who we are missing, because I thought about Todd Christensen. But I really have a hard time removing him from the broadcast work he did with the Mountain.
You got to remove him from that, though. I mean, he's a terrible announcer, but he was – and you're a little younger than I am. I remember
him. The man loves the thesaurus.
Yes, he does love this.
He loves the thesaurus.
He was a heck of a player.
Yeah,
and, switched positions coming out of college from – fullback to, but we've kind of used him as a H-back type anyway, but so very, very, very good career. So Matt, we need to finish off with one last thing. One Twitter question, one tweet back question, and then our finale. So Ben Hoops, that's at BYU10S Menace. He asks one not totally BYU related, but I thought it would be interesting. St. Mary's is appealing their NCAA thing, the infractions coming against them. Any chance of success and effect for BYU in the West Coast Conference? I'll take first shot at this. I don't think there's much chance of success. I don't think the NCAA is particularly merciful. So I would put it at, less than 10%. Effect for BYU and West Coast Conference? Quite frankly, to me, in most ways, it's bad. I guess in some ways you could say, that may make it easier for them to be one of the top two teams and get to the the NCAA tournament. But quite frankly, I think it's actually better if St. Mary's is good, not their couple scholarships down. I would rather see their program at full strength than not. Any additional thoughts?
No, I mean, the flip side of that, obviously, is you get them not at full strength. They'll be decent enough that it might look okay on your resume to beat them still. And it leaves a little bit more room at the top for BYU to get up there and get a tourney bid.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, if the conference is a two-team conference, then it becomes Gonzaga and BYU at that point. Because even down a scholarship or two, they're still going to be pretty good. They'll still be better than most of the other teams in that conference.
Yeah.
I don't think they become
Pepperdine
as a result of this, right? So, no offense to Pepperdine here, I totally got distracted because whenever I think about them, when I was at BYU, I remember going to volleyball games against Pepperdine.
Yes.
And
yes.
They had this guy that was just gigantic.
Yes,
I remember.
He
was
him.
Just, his shoulders were as broad as a house, and he could, I mean, he threw it down. I mean,
yes,
that guy.
I remember that. So that is what we call
he put it. He would put it into the net, and the net would fold, and the ball would go. Anyway, that guy was awesome. I have no memory of what his name was, but he was very good at volleyball.
That's also a segue to, we should have a shout-out to both the rugby team for winning the national championship and the men's volleyball team for getting very close.
Very close.
And getting to the championship game. Unfortunately, they did not win that, but I would say absolutely hats off to both the rugby and volleyball teams. Were you able to see any of either team this year?
I saw a little bit of volleyball. I didn't see any rugby.
I saw some of both, but unfortunately I didn't catch any of the last.
The end, so I missed it.
Yeah, same here. So I didn't get a chance. And some of those games were the volleyball games were quite late.
But look, the volleyball program is good.
Fantastic, yeah.
And they've had some very good success in the past. There's really good history there, and this is, the same is true for rugby.
Didn't you give Ryan Millar a smoothie once?
Ryan Millar, actually, I was introduced to Ryan Millar through you. So
yes,
but listen, the guy liked his he liked the Zuka juice. Okay,
the Zuka juice.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Anymore.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Yes. Who didn't like the Zuka?
Everybody loved that.
Everybody liked the Zuka.
Listen, that was a fun job in college.
Yes, and at the same time, I was working. Wasn't I working at Brick Oven then?
I believe you were working at Brick Oven. Then.
Serving up some delicious pizza
and root beer.
That's right, I was. So Matt, let's finish off with this. Iron Man 3, awesome or super awesome?
Oh, super awesome.
So I have decided that with these kind of movies, I do not analyze them anymore. I sit back and I watch and I have fun like I'm a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sitting in King's Speech. I'm sitting in Iron Man 3. I'm going to sit back and let it rock, and man, did it rock.
Yeah, you're watching a movie where Robert Downey Jr. puts on a metal suit and, like, flies around and shoots people.
And
this is not the King's Speech.
No, this is not the... Well, in King's Speech might have been helped... I'm just kidding. I actually like the King's Speech, but it might have been helped by Robert Downey Jr. in a robot suit.
You know what? A lot of movies would be helped by that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Did you see it in the 3D? Did you Ziggy watch it?
I did not. I did not Ziggy watch it. Did you see, though, he got a deal with the real 3D people to make those glasses?
Yes, and if you if you buy a Ziggy Yonsa jersey, you get a free pair of 3D glasses. So that's fantastic.
I did not see Iron Man 3 Ziggy style. I just watched it, you know.
I'm not a big 3D guy. I liked Avatar in 3D. It was pretty cool. But almost every other time I watch a movie in 3D besides that one, I'm extremely disappointed.
Yeah, I'm not. I think it's distracting.
Yeah, and my wife hates them. Hates the 3D movies. She gets motion sick, but it doesn't bother me.
If I wanted to see something in 3D, I would just walk around in the real world.
Yes. Well, I have a 3D Blu-ray player. But not a 3D television. It was just a really good deal on the Blu-ray player. So it doesn't really matter. All right, Matt. Well, I don't know what our next one's going to be. We may be off for another couple of weeks. There's not a lot going on for BYU sports right now. But check up on us at VanquishTheFoe.com. You can tweet at us, as always, at BYU_RiseShout. And, yeah, we'll we'll keep you up to date on when we are having these off-season ones. And, of course, looking forward to getting very – I was about to say looking forward to getting very regular, but that sounds like a bolder than I am.
Well, you know, that happens to all of us with age.
Yeah, that's right. But looking forward to the season getting closer, getting very excited for the season. But, Matt, anything else before we sign off?
No, I think we've about covered it.
Yes, we have.
And, you know, if we had one more round in that draft, I would have taken Lee Johnson.
Well, unfortunately, that's the rules and the rules. But you can, of course, you could sign him as an undrafted free agent.
Maybe that's what I'll have to do.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, thanks everybody for downloading. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the best BYU podcast that's hosted by two brothers. That's us, by the way. And we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Love!